It was a quiet Wednesday morning around the office. Too quiet. Like someone should be there or something was about to happen. The novelist walked in and took a seat, waiting for the guy with the microphone to finally turn his way and ask a few questions. He said his name was Rosengren. Clive Rosengren. Okay, I'll bite. What's a guy with a long list of acting credits doing writing detective novels? And I'll break character here to give a proper introduction to Clive Rosengren, the author of four published mysteries centered around private detective Eddie Collins. Clive Rosengren the latest of that in that series is called Martini Shot. But before writing mysteries, Clive was an actor in Hollywood with dozens of credits listed at IMDb, including the movies Ed Wood and That Thing You Do. Clive Rosengren, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Nice to be here. And that was a very good... is there a burgeoning novel there, perhaps?
I don't know. The style is just so fun to get into, isn't it?
I know. I always start. Many of my books I've started with the title, and gone from there.
Really? So yeah. You did Murder Unscripted, and
in particular, Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon. That has something, you know. My nephew's wife uttered that phrase one time a few years ago, and it stuck in my head. And I said I have to use that title somehow, and I finally found a story that I wrapped it around. So
you got lots of roles, as we pointed out in your acting career. You call yourself a recovering actor. Why?
Yes, I'm a recovering actor in the fact that I've given it up. I've kind of lost the passion. I got up here in 2004, did a season of OSF, and wasn't asked back. Maybe that's part of the reason. I'm not sure. But I had started my first novel in L.A., put it on the back burner while I was still trying to revive a career that was more and more becoming a rumor. And when I got up here and all of a sudden found out I had all that time on my hands, I took it off the back burner, got it done, showed it around to a point where I could get it published. So I've left the acting stuff behind me now. So
there's lots of acting in your books, including by Eddie Collins, the main character. How near or far is Eddie Collins to the real Clive Rosengren?
Well, anybody that writes a novel in first-person narrative, I think, is lying if he doesn't say that there's part of that that's part of me. You know, I don't know. I think Eddie drinks a little bit too much, more than I do. But, yeah, there's a certain amount of Eddie in me, I think. I mean, after 18 years in Hollywood, the cynicism can become pretty deep.
It gets pretty apparent in the books as well. Is Eddie a bit of a reluctant detective?
Well, the idea I had behind it was that, you know, unless you're one of the on A-list and one of the Toms and the Brads and all those guys, most actors, you know, have to have jobs to sustain themselves, pay the rent. So you teach, you substitute teach, you tend bar, you sell real estate, you drive Uber or Lyft or whatever. Well, Eddie, I set Eddie up as being, he was in the Army, he was an MP. And at one time, he worked as an armed security guard for a gated community. So he had the qualifications to get a California PI license. And I figured, well, I'll have him do the PI work and still have one foot in the entertainment business. So it's not so much that he's reluctant, but it's out of necessity a lot of times.
Your desire to write specifically detective fiction apparently comes from a long admiration of the genre.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always had a fascination with the private eye, you know, going back to Chandler and Hammett and Ross McDonald and those guys. But there's something, you know, I think he's sort of a tarnished knight and errant, you know. He's an interesting character. And I mean, it's a well-used trope, you know, and there's lots of criticism that says the PI genre is dead, and I don't think that's true. It's just, you know, if you can find a different sort of characteristic for your private eye, and that's why I put him in Hollywood. So one of the things I want to continue to do in the books is to have him in a situation on a film set or a TV set where something happens or something occurs that the normal reader would say, oh, I never would have thought of that. For instance, in Murder Unscripted, when we first meet Eddie Collins, he's doing a TV commercial for Chubby's Chicken, and he's working with this young actor who's never done a food spot. And at one point, a production assistant asks them if they want a spit bag. And the kid says, what's a spit bag? And Eddie says, trust me, you'll need a spit bag. And what a spit bag is, as gross as this may sound, is that it's a place where you put the food that you're eating, get it out of your mouth so that your palate is clean and you can continue to do those Pepsodent smiles and, you know, all that. Uh-huh. Well, the poor kid doesn't know this, and, you know, he refuses it, and he gets sick and all that. So, and I've had several readers that, wow, I never would have thought of that. But it's essential.
It is a funny first meeting of Eddie Collins, and I think he talks about, and I think it was my 37th chicken thigh when my pager went off. So Eddie has a pager. Eddie drives a Cutlass. He's a bit of a throwback, isn't he?
He's a little bit of a throwback. When I wrote that first book, it was changed to where he got rid of the pager. And as well, I had an earlier publisher I had to get the rights back, so it was republished by Coffee Town Press. Mm-hmm. And I changed it so that he did get rid of the pager and had a cell phone, because it suddenly dawned on me, if you're an actor in Hollywood, you rely on a phone. You have to have a phone to keep in touch with agents and all that. Plus, pay phones are becoming extinct, you know, and you can't carry around a roll of quarters constantly. So he gradually got a cell phone, and he's becoming more and more adept. And now in the latest novel, he's got a computer, and so he's coming along.
Well, yeah, the first time that he talks about asking his assistant, Mavis, what do you call that thing where you look for stuff? The gaggle, is it? Instead of Google. But in spite of that, he's cultured, too. He's a big movie buff, and he puts on some Vivaldi instead of just watching an old movie.
Right. He has an eclectic sense of music and stuff like that. And I think in a lot of cases, he looks at life through the prism of movies a lot. Like he'll see a character or he'll interview somebody, and it will remind him of a character in the movies, like an Edward G. Robinson thing. Or at one point he says the guy had a Kirk Douglas chin. Well, everybody knows what Kirk Douglas, that deep cleft.
That very deep cleft of the chin, yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking to Clive Rosengren, who is he calls himself a recovered actor, but now he's also a mystery novelist. He lives in the Rogue Valley now and has written four books that have been published thus far about his character, Eddie Collins, who is also an actor trying to make a go of it in Hollywood, but he's not really good enough to not have a day job, and his day job turns out to be detective. So some fun Hollywood noir stuff from Clive Rosengren, and we invite you to join the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you've set yourself an interesting challenge here, I would think, Clive, because you mentioned that, you know, the hard-boiled detective novel is a bit of a trope, but you've also set it in now. And so you've got this guy who's hard-boiled, but only up to a point. I mean, Eddie does have actual feelings and acknowledges them once in a while.
Right. In the Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon, he gets a girlfriend. It's a woman that he had done an acting gig with a few years ago. They had a relationship that didn't go anywhere, and then she's come back into his life to hire him to help find her brother. And so he gets the spark is reignited between the two of them. And now where that will go, I don't know. I mean, he had an ex-wife that was murdered in the first book, and now he's involved with another actress. Does this work or does this not? Who knows? You know, two competing careers. But yeah, he's kind of a tough guy, but at the same time, he's got a real soft side of him. Now, in Martini Shot, for instance, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but at the end of book one, he discovers that he has a daughter that he's never seen, was given up for adoption without his knowledge. So Martini Shot now takes place 12 years later, and this daughter has learned that she's been adopted, and she wants to know about her birth parents. Well, Eddie has no idea whatsoever how to deal with a 12-year-old girl, you know? So he talks to his secretary and his girlfriend, and he does meet her, and it goes off pretty well. And you show there's a side of him that's you don't see in the three previous books.
You're very charitable in your acknowledgments, too, because I noticed that in the acknowledgments for Martini Shot, you start with people who've raised a 12-year-old girl, because that's not something you have in your own realm of experience.
Right. I have a good friend that lives up on Madeline Island in Lake Superior who has a daughter. So I asked him, and his daughter has two 12-year-olds, and they gave me some information. You know, they're glued to their phones, mm-hmm. for instance, you know, and they call themselves a squad, mm-hmm. you know. When I first created the girl and I ran it by my writers group and they said, I don't know, she sounds. So I went back and I made her a little bit older and a little bit more mature, you know. And I think, well, from what I've heard anyway, that I seem to have gotten it right. But yeah, you know, I mean, 12-year-old girl, what do I know about this? You know, I don't know anything about this. And the secretary says, oh, come on, it'll be fine, you know.
Talk about that writer's group. You can describe them as the Monday Mayhem group in a couple of the acknowledgement sections.
We have a group of five people. Four of us are published, and one is working on it, that we call ourselves Monday Mayhem. We meet every other Monday, about twice a month. And it's our first line of criticism. I mean, it's our default, you know, they give us good information. Sometimes don't listen to them. You know, we say, okay, yeah, I take your point, but that's not what I want to do. But it's very invaluable. I mean, there are two schools of thought. Some writers don't want anything to do with a writer's group, and some you know, rely on them. And I think it's very good because it gives you a different perspective. For instance, in my in the third book,
Velvet on a
Tuesday. I have the character Carla Rizzoli, who's his girlfriend, and I had her killed by Eddie accidentally. And I think you know Michael Nieman, who might have.
Yes, he's also a member of that group, right?
Right, Michael's a member of that group, and I brought it in. And I was very self confident, you know. I was going to say, hey, this is a good noirish sort of ending, you know. The hero loses his girl. And Michael said, Clive, you can't do that. You've spent an entire book setting up this character, and now you kill her off? If Eddie does that, he'll never pick up a gun. He'll never get involved in another case. And I said, you're absolutely right. So I went back and changed it to where she's wounded, but not by him. So that it's that kind of critical eye that they bring, which is very, very, because you know, you sit at that keyboard and you lose sight of it after a while. Mm-hmm. You can't see the forest for the trees, you know. And it's very valuable, I find.
Clive Rosengren is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's written four mysteries in the Eddie Collins series now, Murder Unscripted, Red Desert, Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon, and Martini Shot. Lives in the Rogue Valley. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about how you have modernized Eddie a bit. He's not straight out of the 1940s. You know, he has some feelings and actually eventually embraces some technology, so he's not a complete Luddite. These books that women could enjoy reading, I mean, we're still in Eddie's head, and there's still some of the detective stuff. It's not quite like her legs were, you know, 9 feet tall. And
right,
her head.
Right. Yeah, I think there's I have a lot of readers that are women that really enjoy Eddie, because he's a likable guy. You know, it's not like he's certainly not Mickey Spillane and you know, what's the guy's name?
Mike Hammer.
Mike Hammer. He's not a Mike Hammer character. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a soft side to him. And, you know, he's appreciative of women. He enjoys their company, you know. At the same time, you know, he's got an eye for a good-looking lady. There's no doubt about that. But I'm running into, in the book I'm working on now, he runs into a situation where he and Carla have a pretty good spat. Mm-hmm. And he goes off and he has a few drinks and he thinks, well, maybe I'm wrong, you know, and talks to another lady, his secretary, Mavis, who I love writing. Mavis is...
She's just like the most level-headed person.
I just have a wonderful time creating her. I can see her in my mind's eye. And she, you know, she pulls his covers. She doesn't put up with anything. Come on, Eddie. Have you ever thought about her point of view? And it gets him thinking. So, yeah, he's got I think he's got a side that that women appreciate or that can certainly identify with and enjoy.
You mentioned some of the cynicism about acting and the entertainment business. There's a part where one actor tells another. I forget whether it's Eddie telling another person or vice versa, but Eddie says in his head, in this town, flattery is as cheap as day-old bread. Right. I mean, you got a real mix of feelings yourself about the movie biz, I would guess, after your years in L.A.
Yeah, it's impossible not to have after 18 years, because there's just a lot of phoniness, I guess. There's a lot of pretension. There's a lot of, the feeling I'm better than you are, you know. And I mean, I think it's in Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon. I relate the fact that he lands a beer commercial, and it gets pulled out from under him because the producer had not bothered to see the audition tape nor the callback tape, and he shows up at the wardrobe fitting, and the producer says, "No, no, 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 that's not who I had in mind." So he gets the job pulled out from him. Now, he still gets paid for it. But the thing is, you do those commercials because of the residuals, you know? And it's those kinds of attitude where you want to walk up to the producer and say, look, I understand your problem, but at least you could have come to the actor and said, look, I'm real sorry, but I've gone. But, you know, they don't do that. It's just stick people, you know? So it's that kind of stuff that, you know, I've gone to auditions and you stand there and you do your thing or whatever, and there's people are sitting at the table and they're looking at something. Sometimes they're even having lunch.
Uh-huh.
You know,
they're barely paying you any attention.
Barely paying any attention to you at all. Well, it's after a while that, you know, really sinks into an actor, you know.
There's a great first scene in Murder Unscripted that I'll try not to ruin here, but and this is again our first introduction to any of the work in the Eddie Collins books, and so we're not really sure what's going on. This couple is hooking up. It goes from sex to laughter very fast, and is on a movie set, and I can imagine there's a big catalog of busted movie scenes in your head.
Oh yeah, one of the things that constantly makes me laugh is when I see a gag reel or outtakes.
Uh-huh.
I don't care what kind of a production it is, what kind of a movie it is, that breaks me up because it's this controlled atmosphere that suddenly is just blown up in their face. Yeah, it's really funny stuff. And the young actor working with the older actress, and she starts to lose an eyelash, and he can't help himself, and he busts up. And of course, she's not feeling well, and she's an old seasoned pro, and she just blows up at him and storms off the set. And that's the first scene of the book.
There's some great description of the unglued fake eyelashes looking like a spider crawling across her face, and then she drops a malapropism in it. I'm sorry, I can't, and he breaks up. And
yeah,
and
he says, "I'm sorry, I can't do it. Is this, that, and the other thing, and the thing is over, and it's done in a truffle, and that." That sets the guy off. I mean, that's not the line. He's supposed to be trifle, and he can't. I'm sorry, I can't hold it back.
All right. Again, we're talking to Clive Rosengren on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of four Eddie Collins mysteries, and we gather there's a fifth in the works right now. Does Eddie ever get to the old-fashioned noirish ways? I mean, bare knuckles and snub-nosed 38s and car chases and all that stuff?
Well, so far not car chases, but he certainly gets in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's in a martini shot. He's almost killed up at Lake Arrowhead. So he runs into danger. But I haven't had any car chases yet, but there's certain times when he gets in trouble and he's been roughed up and knocked around. He's had a bullet or two, you know, shot at him and stuff like that. So he doesn't escape that altogether, but who knows where he goes?
It's funny when you think about car chases in the movies shot in the L.A. area because, basically it's the only time you actually see traffic moving consistently in the L.A. area.
Exactly.
In a car chase.
Exactly.
I got to ask about I was going to ask if the books can be read out of sequence. Page 9 of Martini Shot told me no because there's a big change in Eddie's life that you mentioned already. Eddie does grow a bit then. I mean, over the course of the series, he becomes a bigger, better person.
Yeah, when I got the new publisher, Coffee Town Press, I had to come up with a sort of what I call a dossier for him, because I hadn't fully defined, you know, how old he is and all that. But the publisher said, I think we got to know more. So I gave him he got into Hollywood about a little 2000 or 2001 or whatever. So he's aged about 10, 11 years by now. And yeah, he's gotten a little more mellow. I think having the girlfriend Carla Rizzoli in his life has helped that. And I think his use of the cell phones and computer and all that. So he's changed. He's evolving, I think. Yeah.
So you mentioned that one of them, pretty much you got the title and it moved on from there. Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon. You had to turn into a book. So I mean, beyond the title inspiration, how do you figure out what the action of the book is going to be? Who the new characters, the plot, all that stuff.
I think I'm stealing this from Stephen King, where someone asked him, where do you get your ideas? And he said, oh, there's a post office box in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. it's a process of just discovery. Now, with the first one, Murder Unscripted, I had a screenplay that I'd written with an actor friend. So that was my Bible, sort of. And then the second one, I got inspired by a Quentin Tarantino movie. And the third one was the title. And the fourth one was people kept asking me, is he going to meet that daughter? Is he going to meet that daughter? So then that started the germs of an idea. You know, there are two schools of thought for writers. They're called pantsers or plotters. Uh-huh. Plotters are the people that outline, you know, and the pantsers are the people that fly by the seat of their pants. Now, so far, with three out of the four books, I've done that, and there are drawbacks to that, that you run out of ideas and you don't know where your plot is going. But I find, which is happening with the fifth one now that I'm writing, but what happens is it's a process of discovery. You start along with I've got, you know, a general idea of the inciting incident, as it were, and how it should end up. Now, how I get there is another question, but you just continue, you know, it's a chapter at a time, and you write a character, and the character winds up saying something, and say, oh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Let's see where that goes. And I think that's the joy in the writing the thing, even though you don't have a fully defined plot.
You're finding out as you go along.
Yeah, kind of discovering it as you go along.
The quiet moments with Eddie are you know, they're appropriate for the genre. Things like, this is from Murder Unscripted from chapter 26. I sat at my desk, staring at the telephone, already anticipating what Mavis would say when she came in and saw her boss with a bandage on his left hand, a black eye, a swollen nose, and an ice bag on his shoulder. So this is fun stuff to write, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, as I say, I've always been fascinated with the private eye. It's a genre that's going to stick around, mm-hmm. you know, and I think the challenge for the writer is to find a niche, you know. I think I've kind of found a niche in the genre that's got an actor, a working actor, who's also a working private eye. I think I might have a little corner there. I'm not sure, but...
We talked about your Monday Mayhem group and how you paid them some tribute in the acknowledgments of the books. You also thank Brad Whitmore in Martini Shot, a fine local actor and a former acting teacher.
Yep.
How did he help you here?
Well, Brad sat next to me in the dressing room when I was that year at OSF, and we've gotten to be good friends. And he's a voracious reader. He loves to read crime fiction, and I've just given him the first draft of the books. And he's agreed to read them, and he gives me good notes, good stuff, you know, from his point of view. Yeah, and he'll get this next one when I'm done with it, sure.
So there's one more for sure on the way.
Yeah, I'm working on the fifth one, which is called Frog in a Bucket. And then I've got a sixth one that the publisher, I'm under contract with the publisher. I have the title, and that's as far as I've gotten so far. But right. I have to get through this fifth one first.
So five and six are going to be from Coffeetown Press as well?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about your ability to hold on to a joke through multiple volumes of the book. I mean, I granted I did some skimming, but I read a fair amount of Murder Unscripted and some of the most about Martini Shot as well, and I love the reference again to the carpet in the hallway outside Eddie's office.
I know. My writers groups kept referring it to. It's almost a character in itself. Yeah, this office. I mean, I write cinematically. I see it in my head, you know, and I just fill in. And I see this kind of old building on Hollywood Boulevard that will probably be raised sooner or later. But he's got these neighbors. He's got a Russian doctor who grunts. And he's got a talent agency, a young modeling agency. And then he's got a young man who runs a men's magazine. Mm-hmm. And these characters are so great. But I made reference in one of the earlier books to the spots on the carpet and the landlord who won't change it. And also, all of a sudden, he comes in with this... with this psychedelic carpet. And yeah, it goes on for, I think, quite a bit in Martini Shot.
So you mentioned that one of these came from a screenplay originally, from Murder Unscripted,
I guess
it was, yeah. And so you have done some other screenplays as well.
I have, When I was in L.A., an actor friend of mine and myself joined a screenwriting workshop, and one of the screenplays we wrote was something called Lights, Camera, Murder. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible screenplay. I still think I have a copy of it, but at one point I asked my friend if I could take it and novelize it. And he said, sure, no problem. And that evolved into Murder Unscripted. But I wrote a few others. Yeah, I've got a couple of them that placed fairly high in the Nicole Fellowship with the Academy of, you know, the TV or the Motion Picture Academy, mm-hmm. that I wrote and got quarterfinals and semifinals on them. But of course, they never went anywhere, so someday I'll novelize those, too.
All right. But right so far, we have published Murder Unscripted, Red Desert, Velvet on a Tuesday Afternoon, and Martini Shot. And in the works, Frog in a Bucket, as you heard it here first, right, from Clive Rosengren and the Eddie Collins Mystery Series. A lot of fun to read. Thanks for joining us in the exchange today.
My pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Short break.